Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte. The spirit of performance is what defines Acura. And now, it's electric. Introducing the ZDX, Acura's most powerful SUV yet. Crafted using the same formula that brought them electrified supercars and multiple IMSA championships, the ZDX has track-tested performance that packs an energy all its own. Unlock the energy and order yours at Acura.com.
This is the China Sports Insider Podcast. My name is Haik Balian. And Mark Dreyer is on the other end of the line. Mark, how you doing?
I am very excited today, Haik, because as we teased last week, a very, very special guest on the China Sports Insider podcast this week.
Yeah, we are going to talk to maybe one of the most famous athletes in China. I think that's probably debatable, but we can debate that. We've talked about him on this show. It is Zhou Guanyu.
Zhou Guanyu.
He was on the line. I think he was in Barcelona, right? Where he's gearing up for the Spanish Grand Prix. Mark, how famous is Zhou Guanyu?
I mean, look, he's a rookie in F1. He is a up-and-coming star, I think it's fair to say, in China. He's certainly not anywhere close to the level of the names of the past, you know, the Yao Mings, the Li Nas, Lin Dan, but the badminton player, you know, those sorts of players. But, you know, I think everyone is aware of Zhou Guanyu right now because of the attention that he's received from the media. When he scored a 10th place finish in his debut race and got 1 point on his debut, to be in the points, you know, everyone was posting about it. People who I had no idea had been following or had an interest in motorsports were posting about it on their WeChats. And so I was really, really surprised to see quite how many people were aware of that, and of course then we're following him since. He talks a little bit in as we'll hear later about how the attention he received in 2019, and just kind of wondered out loud, like, I mean, it would be amazing to come back to Shanghai now. This was the last time he was there, he said, and it would be crazy. I mean, a different league in terms of his profile within China, and just, you know, as a homegrown star for a major international sports event like that, it's going to be so good when, and please sooner rather than later, we can get the Shanghai Grand Prix back.
But what is that going to happen, Mark?
Let me gaze into my crystal ball.
Crystal ball, exactly. You know, that
kind of leads us into our next story.
Well, yeah, I mean, the biggest sports story in China in sport is still COVID. I mean, after we recorded last week, another bombshell that China will not host the Asian Cup next summer. The implications are just not good. I read that piece in Reuters by Michael Church that you were where you were interviewed, Mark. And that was about how Chinese football, and he's writing about the men's game, and that was about how Chinese football is in a tailspin just 10 years after it looked like it was going to take over the world. Now, we touched on this in December when we interviewed Tariq Panja of the New York Times and Nikki Wong, who's an advisor with the CSL. And in the Reuters piece, and I want to sort of follow up with you with this, you said it used to be a given that Xi Jinping, would live to see China host a World Cup, but now I think it's only 50-50. 50-50 seems really optimistic. Give me the optimistic case. Why are you saying 50-50?
Okay, so this is obviously speculative, but in his lifetime, so Xi Jinping is about to turn 69. So, you know, what are we talking about? Another 20 plus years? I don't think it's out of the realms of possibility that China will recover from COVID and then become a destination. We hope it will become an international sporting destination at some point. Now, we've talked many times on the last few programs that it's not going to happen this year. It's not going to happen next year. hopefully it's not too long before China is able to emerge in some level from this pandemic. And then it's still the size of the market, you know, like that. That's why brands haven't, you know, up and left in the way that perhaps they are doing in Russia. That's some of the headlines we're seeing right now. So
good point.
It's honestly 6 months from now, who knows what's going to happen. So it's very hard to talk about what might happen in 20 years. But, you know, China is still known to be able to host a great event. Like, that's a given. We've seen that from two Olympics. We've seen it from other events as well. It has money. It has the political will to attract a World Cup.
It's not going to be.
Yeah, it's not going to be, you know, the 2030 or even the 2034 World Cup that perhaps we thought a decade or even half a decade ago. That was when it was so you know, people were really beginning to talk about China hosting a World Cup. But to say in his lifetime, I'm thinking, well, we've got sort of like a 20, 25 year time frame there. So I think it's still possible. But the immediate future for China is, I have to say, it's grim. It's really grim. I mean, I want to credit the AFC actually for kind of putting pressure on China to make a decision. It was an early call, but you know, if they want to put an alternate host in place, you know, that takes time. The AFC for all these events and of course a lot of organizers for major events, they do site visits. Now you can imagine what that was turning out to be like for China. A team would come over here and they'd be in quarantine for 3-4 weeks, and then of course the difficulty of visiting 10 cities in China and traveling between all those things. I mean, absolutely just ridiculous and frankly unfeasible. So it quickly became obvious that it wasn't going to happen for 2023, June next year. And they've pulled the plug.
Was it the AFC's decision at the end of the day, or was it the Chinese sporting authorities who made the call?
Well, the way that it's been written is that China has relinquished its hosting rights. I think it was some sort of a joint decision. I think it doesn't look like China was. I think China understood the terms of its hosting requirements, and that doesn't just start you know, the middle of June next year. There's all the build up. I mean, talk about the. Talk about hosting the draw, you know, when the draw is scheduled for February next year. Now, for a World Cup draw, for these big events, you want coaches on site, ideally, at some big kind of launch event where everyone's discussing and building up. I mean, can you imagine coaches flying in for 3 weeks of quarantine for a 20-minute draw? It's just not going to happen. And online, of course, is not the same. So all these things, you know, contribute to it. And China doesn't. Obviously, there's many different parties who are making decisions within the CFA, which is, of course, for all its bluster about, you know, we're free of government control. Of course, it's part of the sports ministry here. We know that. However, there's going to be football people who were trying to hold a good football tournament, and they realize that they just can't under the current conditions in China. So they're going to understand the situation and the fact that it's just unrealistic to try and attempt. But I think it's good that they made a decision, just because we've seen so many late cancellations with the Asian Games, with the World University Games, and so on for previous events in China.
The implications, though, of this beyond sport are huge, Mark. Like, just here in Beijing, I mean, you talk to people and you're like, well, wow, like something that is... You know, we've been living with these zero COVID policies for a long time. To cancel something or to move something that's over a year out is kind of a psychological blow here. At least it was for me. Are we going to be living with this for another year? The answer seems to be yeah.
I mean, I think there's two ways of looking at this. The best case scenario is that China can't guarantee today that it would have been able to host a fully open tournament next June. And of course, we've talked in general details about the logistics of that, you know, 10 different cities, 24 teams, international fans coming in, as well as the pre-build up in terms of the site visits and the launch and the draw and so on. That doesn't mean it couldn't happen. And again, this is the best case scenario. It just means that they couldn't guarantee it today. That's one way of looking at it. The other is that China is already preparing for a long lockdown. The answer is somewhere in between, but I'm afraid that it's probably tending towards that second version, the more negative version. There's no sign that I can see that China is planning to emerge from COVID zero at all. They've just doubled down entirely, tripled down almost, and said, this is what we're going to do. And anyone who questions it, you know, no questioning of this can be tolerated. Like, it's really depressing. Maybe that narrative changes, but there's no sign whatsoever of us turning the corner.
What about the CSL? Can you see it not happening at all, the season just being completely abandoned?
I think it'll happen. They did the bubble system last time. That's what they're setting up to do for this year. But as we said before, you know, what's the point, really? You know, fans can only really watch on TV, and frankly, they have many different better options of soccer to watch on TV. So the fans that and the clubs that already have somewhat tenuous connection with their fan bases, because a lot of the teams get changed and the names get changed and the locations are switched on a rotating basis. You know, there's a tenuous connection there between clubs and fans in soccer, and so that's being stretched to breaking point if it hasn't broken already.
Well, let's shift over to another sport, tennis. There's talk now of the Hong Kong Open coming back for 2023. What's the story there, Mark?
Well, the story is that the tournament organizer was asked, you know, what's going on here? And he said, well, look, he'd love to get it on the calendar for 2023. He said COVID currently makes it not possible for any tournaments in China this calendar year. We knew that, of course. And of course, the other big elephant in the room is Peng Shuai. So he said, right, currently, COVID is making tournaments impossible. And until the WTA is able to sort out the Peng Shuai situation, then it's not going to happen. So here's the quote from Philip Mok. He said, you know, as long as we are unclear on COVID-19 and Peng Shuai, there is no way to host it again. So he's trying to be optimistic for 2023, but like, where are we going to get clarity on COVID-19? And we're certainly not getting clarity on Peng Shuai for a long time, arguably if ever. Like I just don't see a resolution to the Peng Shuai situation. They've called for an investigation. We've talked about this before, but just to go over it one more time, they've called for an investigation. China is not going to have an investigation into Peng Shuai's allegations, because their line is, well, it was all a misunderstanding and she's retracted them, so there's nothing to investigate. Even if they were to have an investigation, that wouldn't satisfy the WTA perspective anyway. So again, we're at an impasse. I don't see any kind of resolution there. COVID is sort of a convenient excuse not to move on, because they can sort of say, well, we would be playing but for COVID. You know, maybe time heels. There'd be plenty of people who'd be very angry if it was just sort of brushed under the rug. But who knows? But 2023 is best case scenario. Don't hold your breath.
I am not holding my breath. Another bit of news that we haven't covered yet is in F1. Mercedes Formula One boss Toto Wolff wants three races in China to have the same number of races that are in the US right now. And Mark, boy, did he choose the wrong month to make that suggestion. he called China an important market. You know, of course, there's already one race in Shanghai, and he wants another race in Beijing. And he didn't mention another location. We could talk about that later on. I mean, that just seems so far-fetched at the moment.
Well, look, it's kind of ridiculous. You know, I'd like five races, but it's not going to happen. I mean, quite honestly, the only way that it would happen is that, you know, everyone comes into Shanghai and camps out for 3 weeks, and you have it on three consecutive weekends across a 2 week period to get three races in.
Oh my God!
There are no other F1 standard tracks in China, so one would have to be built. Now, of course, the popular format for new races is the street circuit. They've tried it in Guangzhou for DTM. That was a total disaster. That's probably a whole new podcast in itself with potholes flying off and cars damaging. And they basically had to. that's a rabbit hole there. Beijing could happen, but again, not anytime soon. And then there's been discussion about Hainan for, you know, free trade zone and development of sport. And I could see a track being built there longer term. But when he compares it to the US, we have two on the calendar for this year. We have the Las Vegas race for 2023. So that's an immediate, that's a reality. If it's not this year, it will be for next year. In China, we're talking about very intangible, you know, like theoretical possibilities. Yes, China can build at light speed, but they're not just going to be like, okay, have a race and make sure you get a track that's ready by next year. And again, COVID, hello everyone, COVID, like nothing is happening. You know, there was something I said to in that Reuters piece, and I said, you know, the gloss has come off China's sporting ecosystem. You know, I didn't want to be too over dramatic, melodramatic about it. Right now it feels like there is no sporting ecosystem, and we very much hope that we can get back to something approaching where we were a couple of years ago, and then build on that, and then China can really start to be an important sporting market again. But right now, we've just hit the pause button, and so we're kind of focused on Chinese stars like Zhou Guanyu, who is overseas outside of China, applying his trade around the world.
Right now, the races in the United States calendar are Austin and Miami, and from next year, it's going to be Las Vegas. Could Macau be a possible destination for F1? What is China's version of Austin, or is there one?
I don't know. Maybe somewhere in kind of the foothills in Yunnan or somewhere like that. I can't really imagine building a track there, but you know, somewhere kind of backpacker hip destination type thing.
F1's first mountain track. I think I could totally see it.
I mean, Tibetan Plateau, should be lots of flat space up there.
That's true. It would be actually one of the most stunning locations for an F1 race ever. Now let's get to our interview with somebody who does race outside of the box, and who's going to be a huge part of F1's plans here in China. It's Zhou Guanyu. We spoke to him yesterday, Mark. What should people listen for?
Well, first of all, it was just it was so great to have him on. You know, we've been talking with him and his team for several months, actually, since well before he joined F1. And so it was great that he was able to make time in his very busy schedule, you know, talking with his team. He's just bouncing around from, of course, from testing and his gym work and all the training that he's doing with a lot of media attention that he's getting. I heard a little bit of fire in his voice when people hear when he was sort of asked to, when I asked him about responding to some critics. I think it was interesting that he certainly wasn't expecting to have kind of negative reaction from perhaps some global people who didn't really know who he was. But he was quite happy to he's quite happy to kind of have that put him on the map, and to respond to those critics on the track, which is absolutely the best approach.
It is the best approach. And by the way, the driving is doing a lot of talking. I mean, his team, the Alfa Romeo team, has been doing pretty well this year.
I mean, yeah, he's only been in the points once, but he has been very, very close on a number of other occasions. So if he just gets a little bit more luck and if he's able to develop as a driver throughout the season, I think he could be regularly scoring, you know, sort of 9th and 10th positions. You know, that's best case scenario, but I think he's certainly in the mix.
Well, let's get to it. Here's Zhou Guanyu. We spoke to him from Barcelona.
Zhou Guanyu, thank you so much for coming on the China Sports Insider podcast. It's a delight to have you on. Now, you started off in the points with a remarkable debut at the start of the season. You just missed out on a number of other occasions. What's your goal for the rest of the season? Do you have a specific points target in mind?
Yeah, I mean, I think the goal is always to be in the points, especially like regarding to how this so far the earlier of the season started, you know, pretty well, more than I expected or everyone expected, let's be honest. And so, yeah, for sure, the expectation, I want to go up, move up another level. So which is, you know, target every race weekend, try to fighting always for the points, because I feel like as a team, also for myself, we are capable of doing that. So, yeah, I think that's the target throughout the next, you know, from now on towards the end of the season. And yeah, of course, you know, I have goals that I set to myself early of the year, which I achieved that already. So yeah, I think it's time to go up another step.
This season must have been an absolute whirlwind for you, coming into F1 for the first time and touring around the world. What's been the thing that surprised you most about being in Formula One?
Well, I mean, Formula One is like kind of my dream. So that's what I love about being in Formula One, because it's the dream, it's like the target, that's the reason of, I say, why I started my whole racing journey, because I want to be at the best level of this sport. So yeah, so I love that. I love driving Formula One. Of course, you are traveling around the world. You are racing with the best young drivers, best drivers in history. Or so it's always nice to be competing with them. And yeah, I think once you have in Formula One, there's a lot of stuff you have to take care of. And there's a lot of responsibility for you to with your team. So it's always great to have like a such a team sports. And yeah, I love to be so far. The last five races, of course, there's been up and downs, unlucky moments. But I'm enjoying so far my time here.
What is your relationship like with Valtteri Bottas? And what have you learned from him as a teammate?
Yeah, I mean, he helped me quite a lot, especially in the early part of the season. That everything is like a new chapter for me, and I want to get as much information as possible. So he was a very open person that who is transparent with, you know, all the ideas he has, all these answers he was able to have in his mind. He was, you know, open to share with me. So that's very good, also very helpful for me as a rookie. And then, you know, learning from him, there's everything, you know, because he has so much experience, not just experience, also a very quick driver in single lap pace, in long race distance. So for me to, you know, having an experienced teammate is always helpful. We're not searching, is fighting together against each other. We are trying to help the team move forward. Also for me, it's a great way, you know, to be my first season. It's, of course, it's tough, extra pressure on me because as a rookie, try to, you know, be as quick as him. But nevertheless, I felt like it is a perfect rookie season to have him just because I can learn so much from him.
I think it's safe to say that you've really raised the profile of motorsports here in China. What have you seen and heard from the fans back home?
Oh, I mean, it's just massive support back home. And I think, you know, from my fan base or fan base for motorsport, let's say, or Formula One back home has been growing up massively. And then for myself, yeah, I feel like, you know, to have that first ever Chinese Formula One driver is very good, not just for the, you know, for the people who are interested already in sports, in motorsport. It's more for the people that outside from sports who is interested, who has their countrymen represent for them. And it's just very nice to see, like, global-wise back home in China. It just feels like everybody has, you know, some attention or has some interest in Formula One, which I think is the perfect example. And I'm just very, very honored to be that person who is trying to bring up, you know, the entire motorsports cultures back home. And yeah, hopefully that, you know, I get to race in front of my home crowd one day. That would be awesome.
Now, Guan Yu, a seat in Formula One, as you would know, always requires, you know, a combination of talent, funding, and perhaps even some luck. On the show, we've talked about, you know, your success that you've had throughout in your career, but a lot of people globally didn't necessarily know about you and your background. What would you say to those people who said, you know, oh, he's only in Formula One because of the Chinese market? You know, how would you respond to those critics?
I mean, I think I've done enough talking on track, so there's not much I want to say anymore. But yeah, it was obviously from my side, you know, when I first signed the contract, when I first joined, there's obviously, like you said, a lot of different people has their own idea, own mind, and which I can't help, I can't change. But the only thing I could is that when the season starts, to bring the results on track and bring the talk on track. I think that's the most efficient way and straightforward way, and which I was very happy in a way that I was able to done it so early of the year. So like, yeah, a lot of people start change their mind, start supporting me. So it's always great to see. And yeah, of course, like I knew how much hard working I've been putting to get that seat. Also how much I have been putting last season, you know, to be, like you said, winning F3 Asian, to be 100% secure my super license, then put that into Formula 2, trying to be a championship contender, finish top 3 in the championship. So yeah, I was able to, you know, get that result at the end. So yeah, I was very happy to obviously get the seat. And of course, wasn't expecting people, a lot of people to talk that way. But, you know, if they did, it's not a problem because it feels like you got into their attention. So that's always a good thing. And then it's all about just switching things around with your results in Formula 1.
You mentioned earlier about the fans back home. So how excited are you about the prospect of racing in your hometown of Shanghai? And when do you think that's going to happen?
Firstly, I think, my dream is Formula One. Then the next dream is one in F1 is to have your home Grand Prix, of course, because you saw the atmosphere in Silverstone, for example, for Lewis, or Zandvoort last year for Verstappen is crazy. So, I think every driver's dream try to race in Formula One in their hometown, and that's also mine because I'm from Shanghai, growing up from Shanghai. So that's kind of like a home circuit. It's not just home because of the country, but also the city is my home. So yeah, it's going to be crazy, I think, if that happens. But of course, a bit unfortunately this year that with all these COVID issues that we have to be not having the Grand Prix. But the good thing is that we saw, I think last year, they announced that the Shanghai Grand Prix got extended into 2025. So as long as I'm doing well and, keeping all good in Formula One, and I think that will come all together. But it's not up to me that who decide if we're going to have the Grand Prix or not. It depends on, all different government stuff, which I'm not involved with. But yeah, I think also me, Shanghai are very interesting or very wanted to host events. So it's a matter of when, so I have to wait.
Guan Yu, you've posted pictures in the past of you attending the Grand Prix in Shanghai as a child. What memories do you have of that race, and what's your experience like on the circuit?
For me, I think my most memory was 2019, which was the latest event was hosted, the Chinese Grand Prix last time there. So it was the 1000 Grand Prix of Formula One. And I was in F2 first year. And I was able to have the opportunity to, on Saturday, to doing a demo show in the city center of Shanghai, which I would never expect it because you know how difficult to close the roads in Shanghai, and to be doing donuts in front of the home fan was very crazy. And and then the next memory was on Sunday before the Grand Prix start. I was able to do a one lap demonstration run in the very old Lotus car. So yeah, that was a huge memory for me because it's actually my first time driving in Shanghai because, I moved out from the home very early to start professional racing. So not getting many chances to drive in Shanghai Grand Prix. But this event is always a special event for me. And I remember back then, it was crazy when I went to the the fan zone. There was people just want signature, autograph or pictures. So yeah, can't imagine right now how it's going to be, but yeah, very exciting to do that one day.
That sounds extremely exciting. Now, one of the things I wanted to ask you about is this Netflix series that has sort of taken the United States by storm. And on the tour, how noticeable is it for you, and are you being featured at all in the series?
Yeah, I'll be in Netflix this year for the first time with the Drive to Survival, because before that, I was actually in the series before was in F2, which was Road to F1, and it was a good experience last two years at least, and let's see what's going to happen this year because I don't know too much information about it. All I know is that Netflix will be filming me throughout the season, so let's see how everything ends up, and now I'll talk to you more about it. But yeah, of course, it's a big thing for US, and I think US is a very important one for Formula One, especially the recent years, having 3 Grand Prix next year. So yeah.
Well, we're talking there about developing the US market, but here we're also focused on developing the Chinese market post COVID. As the first Chinese driver in Formula One, What can you do? What have you been doing to develop the sport here in China? What are the main challenges and opportunities that you see?
Opportunity is very big, and I think opportunity is going just getting bigger and bigger throughout the season, because now it's like you get the first interest, people watching it, and there will be more opportunity open. But of course, there's the biggest limitation or challenge is that when we will have the Grand Prix there. I think that's the first thing, and it's always different when you see the Grand Prix just by on TV than see at real life, because you just feel very you know, Formula One, you have to feel the passion about this sports, about the atmosphere, the crowd, and also the engine, the speed drivers are going. So, yeah, I think that's the biggest challenge. But then, yeah, I think everything is just going on the right path at the minute, and we just have to be patient, just because we have, you know, issues that we can't have host a Grand Prix this year. But yeah, it will be amazing, you know, in the coming years that we can finally get the Grand Prix back, because it's been missing now, I think, almost 3 years now, or two, 3 years, if I'm not wrong. So, yeah.
I have to ask you about the Lakers and about Kobe Bryant, because you have talked about Kobe Bryant as being your hero. And that's why you have the race number 24. What is it about Kobe that inspired you?
Yeah, I mean, it's the first kind of like a sportsman that or the first kind of idol or hero for me when I was a kid, because it was like NBA basketball is very famous back home in China. And then as a kid growing up, you're always watching, you know, these players, and he was that player that I was supporting, and I was, you know, really thinking he was one of the greatest. And yeah, like since I was a kid, you know, I'm very into like sports, very into sneakers, and all the sneakers I bought was only Kobe's, because he was the guy who I look up to, like when I was a young kid, and even before I started racing. So it's kind of, you know, I was able this year or last year to pick up a number, then looking through all my numbers. Of course, I have my favorite number, but it's already been taken in Formula One. So then it's like all the other number doesn't mean much to you. So I feel like it can be a very lucky number back home, because, you know, as Chinese people, we're very sensitive with the numbers. But yeah, like, 24 is a pretty lucky number in general, even though it has a 4 on it. But yeah. And then Kobe is, for me, it's just the next option using his number, because I just feel like to bring the mentality and to be respecting him and to have his number, I think it's very honored for me to be using it, just because I feel the energy when I see the number. So it's always great.
Kobe Bryant is someone, obviously, that's inspired you in your career. Now, already you're inspiring the next generation of young Chinese drivers. What would you say to them? What's your advice to a young Chinese motor racing driver who wants to make it at the top of the sport?
I mean, I think it's very straightforward, because I just feel like, firstly, if you have a dream and you have to be really feel the passionate about it, and you have to be, you know, knowing the road is not, the journey is not going to be easy. It's not going to be a smooth way to the top. You have to be, it's like a roller coaster. You have to be really just forcing yourself to pushing over your limits all the time. And then, yeah, I think especially in motorsports, you can't skip the ladder. You have to be following the professional ladder from karting F4 all the way to Formula One, because each like level of championship can really just increase your drivability. And yeah, for me, it's very important to do that. And hopefully that, yeah, we can see another driver in the future. But yeah, believe me, it's a tough one, because, you know, motorsports is not our sport, and it has to be taking a lot of sacrifice, a lot of, you know, energy and mentally also, just to never give up, knowing maybe one day it will come true or not. But yeah.
Guan Yu, I saw a tweet that came from Formula One just the other day that said you were in the top 5 or 6 of drivers this season with the highest number of overtakes, which is very impressive. What would you say is your best skill, your main strength as a driver?
Well, I think it could be more overtakings if I don't have the DNF last race, because I was up for a good one, I feel like. And so, yeah, for me, I think my biggest strength is probably the racecraft. It's like I've been like that for several years also, because the overtaking, I think, is a strong point, but I think my biggest advantage on myself is the racecraft, just because like it's a completely new one in Formula One, because you have to be learning, experience, gaining that. But I just feel like the race pace was always straight away in Bahrain was quite strong, and I was able to maintain that, improving that throughout the season. That's why you see like maybe like sometimes my qualified position is normally where my paces are, just because like, I couldn't use the full potential in quality yet over one lap, but in the race pace is always a strong one. Yeah. But yeah, overtaking is always a good, I liked overtaking. And but I prefer to be at the front and doing your own race stuff.
Well, we wish you the very best of luck, not just this week weekend, but for the rest of the season. We'll be following you closely and hope to speak again soon.
Yep, thanks.
Thank you to Zhou Guanyu. If you have any questions or comments, let us know. Twitter is the best way to reach us. Mark, where can people find you?
Dreyer China, D-R-E-Y-E-R China on Twitter.
And I'm at Haig Balian. That's H-A-I-G-B-A-L-I-A-N. We will see you next week.